You are listening to The Grandest Tour by The Cycling Podcast. Brought to you by iWocker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. iwoca.co.uk.
Today, we're at the Ronde van Vlaanderen.
We had a good go there to try and get across to them, but was it just a case today that those were the two strongest riders, or Alaphilippe as well?
They were the three strongest riders for sure. I knew that from beforehand. I did everything to stick with them. But it was obviously very, very difficult.
Did you see anything of the Alaphilippe crash or just him on the road?
Ground. I saw they were just in front of us. Just before I saw the three of them. And then after...
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I am just getting my breath back after the finish of the Tour Flanders. We'll cross to Daniel and Lionel and their analysis of the Giro d'Italia later in this episode. I know it's been a significant day there too. But here in Oudenaarde, that was Oliver Nassen we heard at the start. He was speaking at the finish of the Tour of Flanders until we were interrupted by one of his teammates, AG2R Romain Bardet, much better known of course for his exploits in July in France in the mountains, but making his debut here, and a very strong one at that. He was in quite a state at the finish as he drew alongside Nassen, physically exhausted but also quite emotional. Nassen turned away to comfort him, ending our interview. But Bardet wasn't the only high profile Frenchman making his debut here at the Tour of Flanders. The incident I asked Nassen about was the awful crash that saw Julian Alaphilippe collide with a motorbike that had pulled into the side and was slowing down to let the leaders pass. Alaphilippe, Wout van Aert and Mathieu van der Poel were away. Alaphilippe had been the most aggressive. He had a go over the top of the Koppenberg with 45 kilometres still to go. Van der Poel was alert to that, and then van Aert looked incredibly strong as he clawed his way up to those two. Then after the Timeberg with 36 kilometres to go and those leading three looking really good and hugging the right hand gutter, van Aert and van der Poel got around the motorbike, but Alaphilippe, who seemed to be on his radio at the time, saw it a bit too late and smacked into it. He was thrown heavily to the ground and his race was over. It seems weird to say that this cast a cloud over the race, because we were treated to a head-to-head between the two riders who have been, I suppose, most exciting in these races, along with Alaphilippe, and who seem likely to dominate them in the years to come. But it did leave a massive what-if hanging over the race and the closing stage of the race, not least because Alaphilippe had looked so good, looked so sprightly as well, and we just don't know what would have happened had the three of them come to the finish together, or indeed if they'd have come to the finish together. Van Aert and van der Poel never looked like being caught, though Nassen did have a go, and at the finish, although he let it out, van der Poel held off van Aert just. The former winner Alexander Kristoff won the sprint behind for third, and in that group was last year's winner Alberto Bettiol of EF Pro Cycling, who I spoke to at the finish.
It was a tough race. I was there on the Koppenberg with the best rider, so I have to be happy. I left a little gap on the Stenbeck Dries because I had a problem at the rear wheel, and this guy stayed in the front. I tried to chase back after Tienberg. I arrived at 5 seconds with another guy, but they didn't give up, so Julien, Mathieu and Wout were stronger. I'm happy because I stayed there in the Koppenberg, but I think the best guy won. I arrived at the finish line without energy, so I gave everything on the asphalt, and probably I didn't have the same best feeling as last year, but the important is to be there once again. It's still a fucking hard race, this one, and it's so beautiful but so hard, so it's always difficult to stay in the front, and every year is not the same.
How did you feel that they were on a different level, those three, I mean, even before they got away?
I think on the climb I also was at the same level as these guys. I showed on the Koppenberg. They were just situation, then They were in front and we tried to chase back, and also if Julien stay with them, for sure they will arrive with 3 minutes. We knew that the race will open a little bit earlier, I said this morning, and in the end they open a little bit early because we didn't go to Gerasbergen. So we expect this early attack. I saw Julien try to speed up in the downhill of the Stemegdris. And I was behind Mathieu, and in the corner before the railways, I had a problem with the rear wheel, as I said. And I left that small gap, and Van Aert arrived from the back and did a sprint. I was in front. I couldn't do... this morning when you asked me you're a favorite, I said I'm not a favorite because I was not the king of cyclocross. I didn't have a Belgian passport and I didn't have the rainbow jersey. So that's why these three guys were a little bit stronger.
What did you think when you went past Alaphilippe lying on the road? Did you see the crash happen or were you shocked by that?
No, I was shocked. I saw him, I don't know what's happened even with the motorbike. Well, I don't know, he always, did some strange movement. It's a pity because, of course, also for the organization, they deserve to say it would be nice to see the rainbow jersey in the front, but it's such a difficult race, again, to stay focused so for so many hours, it's difficult, and every year to be in the front, it's every year a challenge.
We gaan straks aftellen, meneer de burgemeester, dan zijn we nog net iets te vroeg voor. We hebben straks nog een goede anderhalve minuut zo wat te gaan. En dan gaan we de 117 dames op pad sturen voor Vlaanderens mooiste. We zijn op heel precies 1 minuut voor de start. 1 minute left before the start. Encore 1 minuut af voor het départ. We wensen alle dames heel veel succes. We wensen them all the best of luck for this Tour of Flanders edition 2020. En we gaan straks aftellen. Voor wat het startschot betreft, we zijn op een dikke halve minuut vooraleer. Zometeen de burgemeester van de stad Oudenaarde, de heer Warnick de Meulemeester. Met aan zijn zijde onze provincie-gouverneur, mevrouw Carina van Kouter. Ze heeft ook een heel groot wielerhart en een boontje natuurlijk ook voor het dameswielrennen. Zij gaan zometeen deze ronde van Vlaanderen op gang brengen. Burgemeester, hou u klaar, want hier komen de laatste 10 seconden. 10, 9, 8, 7... 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. En geef ze nog maar een aanmoedigingsapplausje met de start van de Ronde van Vlaanderen voor dames.
Well, we heard the countdown to the start of the women's race at Tour of Flanders there. I'm in the centre of Oudenaarde now. The race started just on the outskirts. I walked into the centre, but there's nobody here. But I have met Jan-Peter de Vlieger, the Het Nieuwsblad sports writer. Here we are, JP, in the centre of Oudenaarde. Normally this place is, on Tour of Flanders Day, is bustling, noisy. The church bell has been going off. That's a very familiar sound here. But usually the buses are in the market square. They're not there today. They're cordoned off. And there's nobody around. I've come from the Giro. You and I were at the Tour de France, where there were pretty big crowds, even when they were restricted. Here in Flanders, people have been told to stay at home. And it looks like they've really taken that message seriously.
Yeah, it definitely the message has come across, which I think is a good thing. I know that Flanders Classics really made an effort to get the message across. There's been numerous TV spots involving like all major riders who said watch the tour, the Ronde van Vlaanderen from your home. And like you say, there's nobody around, so everybody's watching at home.
I guess what's at stake is the Tour of Flanders next year as well in April. You know, this is like things might not have changed as much as we would like them to have changed. And so if the race is going to be run again in April, it has to run without a hitch today, doesn't it?
Exactly. Politicians are looking over the shoulders of the organizers. That's very clear. I think Thomas van der Spiegel, who is the CEO of Flanders Classics, he has emphasized that he doesn't want to see any scenes like there were in the Giro, perhaps, or definitely in the Tour. And well,
he's a big guy, isn't he? You don't want to upset him.
No, you don't want to upset
him. He's a former basketball player. How tall is he?
I looked it up yesterday. He's 2 meters and 14 centimeters.
I guess it's not just Tour Flanders that's at stake. It's also Het Nieuwsblad, which is only really a few months away.
Yeah, it's sometimes difficult to imagine that next season is so close, because you have a kind of a Ronde van Vlaanderen feeling today, and then you kind of automatically teleport yourself into April, but it's October. So indeed, and the measurements in Belgium or the
cases are
going up all the time, and restrictions are getting a lot more severe now, so it's very clear that by February we will be in the same situation probably. So yes, it's also a very much a concern for the Omloop Het Nieuwsblad.
Well, just a final comment before we go back in and watch the finale of the race. We've got to catch up with what's been going on. I know you've been doing your admin, JP.
But doing my
secretly, but I'm keeping an eye on the race. But I mean, this more than any other race is a real event, isn't it? And a race that depends on and is known for the crowds of people. And so I've made this argument that cycling is not too diminished by the lack of spectators, that is the backdrop that we love as well as the spectacle of the fans. But maybe this race is an exception to that, because at this race I always have a sense of a real carnival and a real coming out of everybody in Flanders.
That is true. I had the same feeling, that as a TV sport, cycling is not really suffering. The if you enjoy the sport, you enjoy it without the crowds as well. But I agree with you, like the festive aspect of the Ronde van Vlaanderen is not at all there. And kind of the iconic images back in the day on the Muur van Vlaanderen, or now on the Paterberg, that's kind of part of the experience. So yes, I do agree that a one-day race or a monument like the Ronde suffers more than a Tour de France or a Giro d'Italia.
But I guess people here are pleased that the race is on. You'll be pleased at Het Nieuwsblad. How many reporters? I love this question. How many reporters do you have here today?
Not a spectacular number for you, unfortunately, today. Only six. So that's normally would be up to double figures, probably like 10, 11. But already in the Tour de France we were like we had a much lower coverage, because it coincides with the national football competition. But only five journalists.
It must have been a tough time for Het Nieuwsblad when there was no bike racing on at all. I mean, they had to publish a picture of you with your son wearing a Molteni jersey, I believe.
Yeah, anything to fill
desperate
up
for content.
Desperate for content. I mean, he doesn't even speak, my son, yet. So, but we featured him anyway. So that was a great story.
We heard the countdown to the women's race a little earlier, and it finished after the men's race, a good hour or so later, which I think worked pretty well and could work well in the future. It was an interesting race with a really strong Bols Dolmans team dictating it, to the extent that when Annemiek van Vleuten got away, Anna van der Breggen, the world champion, bridged across, and normally that would be game over, but van der Breggen, who rides for Bols Dolmans, wouldn't work, and that neutralised the attack, something that they both seemed to find funny. Van Vleuten didn't seem too annoyed. When they were caught, another Bols rider, Chantal van den Broek Black, went clear and held on to win her first Tour of Flanders win. She's a former world champion as well, of course. I spoke to van Vleuten, who'll leave Mitchelton Scott for Movistar next year, at the finish. Was that a bit frustrating out there?
No, yeah, people think it's frustrating. It's also racing, and I think Anna was not today leader, but usually it's always detected that they don't ride with me, so it was not a big surprise. I knew I would have to go solo, and I tried. Had a good attempt.
You seem to share a joke almost, you and Anna, when she caught you.
Yeah, because I know that she's not riding with me, and she also made a joke about it. So as you can see here where Chantal went. Yeah, then I tried it a bit in the gutter, but it was also not good.
Are you back to full health now? Is the rest recovered?
Yeah, I'm quite surprised and quite happy with today, my shape. Because I went to Sardinia for a training camp to be here on a good level, because I realized in Liège it was nothing. So I didn't want to have the legs of Liège here in the beautiful race Ronde van Vlaanderen. I love this race and I want to have a show good level. So I was happy that I could play a part in the final.
And the season finished for you now?
No, in theory I have to go to Madrid 6, 7 and 8.
Ah, okay, right. How do you reflect on the season with satisfaction?
Yeah, like in my head, it's about the last month maybe, but I should look back. As I had an amazing season in the rainbow jersey, so I should be very satisfied if I realize. Let's settle it in maybe in the off season a bit.
But, big goals next year with a new team as well.
Yeah, I really look forward to it. Like, it's also nice to see Grace Brown really stepping up, and it's for me time to leave. Not because I'm tired of the team. I love my team, and it will be hard to say goodbye.
Well, that was Annemiek van Vleuten after the women's race, and I'm with Jan-Pieter de Vlieger again after, well, both races run off. One, of course, the men's race by Mathieu van der Poel ahead of Wout van Aert, Alexander Kristoff third. I suppose, JP, it was dominated by the crash to Alaphilippe in a way, or this, a lot of stories tomorrow will be about that, rather than this great rivalry that's developing between van Aert and van der Poel.
Yeah, for sure. In the Quickstep camp, they were very much convinced that Alaphilippe was in a winning position. Dries Deveneens thought that he might try to make a move on the Paterberg. Patrick Lefevre was convinced that he would win the sprint. I didn't necessarily agree with him, but he pointed out that in Milan-San Remo he lost by an inch to Van Aert, and that in that race he already had three or even four bike changes. So Lefevre was convinced that he would win the sprint a la Philippe, and for sure it changed the dynamic of the race a lot.
It's funny, Deveneens played such a crucial role at the Tour de France, didn't he, on the stage two, on the Col d'Aix, really set Alaphilippe up then, and he did a similar job here. He lives on the Eau de Quaremont, does he not?
He does, yeah. He lives on top of the Quaremont. He knows these roads very, very well. And the plan clearly was to bring Alaphilippe to the front just before for the Koppenberg, and that worked out very well, of course.
Were you surprised when, after Alaphilippe was out of it, that there wasn't a sort of plan B from De Koenig Quickstep? I mean, those two in front were obviously very strong, but they still had a couple of riders behind. Were you surprised that they didn't sort of weren't able to make any kind of inroads at all into the advantage?
Well, that's the point I'm trying to make in the article I'm writing right now. There was a moment right after the Tijnberg where they were chasing with Madouas, Betiol, Kasper Asgreen and Lampaert. And Lampaert and Asgreen didn't do any relay. They let Betiol and Madouas do all the work. And if they had ridden, there would have been a situation where they had three out of seven riders in the front, which would have given them a lot more options. But Asgreen says it was a decision from the team car, and that they were very, very confident in the chances of Alaphilippe, even in a group with Van Aert and Van der Poel. But I think that afterwards is always very helpful in a race. But if they had ridden with Madouas and Betiol, it would have given them a much better chance.
And JP, I understand you've spoken to the motorcycle driver motorcycle pilot whose bike Alaphilippe hit.
Yes, I did. It's somebody who has 20 years of experience, and he was, of course, devastated with what happened. He felt like he was blocked, like he had no other way to go. And he's, of course, very, very sad that it had such a big impact on the race.
Just a final word from Flanders before we hand over to Daniel and Lionel, who'll talk about the Giro today. But I mentioned earlier, Romain Bardet was very emotional when he finished. He was actually 25th. A really good ride from Bardet. But I think it was because it was his last time riding for AG2R. He was quite upset at the finish. And Oliver Nasson, who I had been interviewing, turned around and put his arm around him.
Okay. I can see why it's emotional for him to leave AG2R after. So I don't know how you pronounce it.
AG2R. AG2R. Okay. Those brown shorts, he'll miss them.
Sorry?
He'll miss the brown shorts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Everybody who leaves AG2R really miss the bibs. Oliver Nasson is very, very keen on the shorts as well. I don't think Greg Van Avermaet is looking forward to riding in those. But.
Right, let's cross over to Lionel and Daniel and hear about the Giro.
Nairo Quintana, Que bravo Nairo Quintana, Nairo Quintana. Scende le Ande e qui diventa già un grande Nairo Quintana. Vien dall'altura e per gli altri è vita dura, Nairo Quintana.
Well, Daniel, Nairo Quintana is not riding this Giro d'Italia, and nor did he ride the Tour of Flanders. So what's all that about?
Well, Napalm, I can't tell you how confused I am today, because I was in the United Kingdom earlier today watching the Tour of Flanders, and then I got on a plane. I landed in France. Now I'm in Spain, in the Basque Country, and I've just watched the Giro d'Italia. And I don't know who did what in which race now. But I think that was 2016, or was 17. It 2017? 2017, it was the stage, the Giro stage that finished at Piancavallo. And afterwards, our sort of sometime troubadour, Dino Zandegu, 1967 Tour of Flanders champion. He, well, Tour of Flanders, very, very apt. He sang, well, the his latest, greatest, or his latest great hit, which was a song that he'd come up with about Nairo Quintana. He'd just taken the pink jersey, but it was going to be pretty short-lived because Tom Dumoulin was going to depose him and win that Giro. But that day as well, Napalm, back in 2017, Piancavallo caused a lot of damage, and it caused a lot of damage today in the Giro, didn't it?
It certainly did. Well, that was a bad day for Tom Dumoulin, although it worked out fine for him in the end. If we had Dino Zandegu singing for us this evening, we'd need something celebrating the Dutch, because it was a great day for Wilco Kelderman and his Sunweb teammate Jai Hindley, who's Australian, of course.
We need André Hazes. Do you know who André Hazes is?
No.
He was this sort of Dutch crooner who I'm sure you're familiar with the, you know, the sort of the Hoop Holland Hoop, the kind the Dutch sort of popular music they play on Alpe d'Huez and whenever there's a major football tournament. Well, André Hazes was the sort of he was the troubadour for the Dutch fans for many years. I've got a bit of a fascination with him, and our Dutch colleagues think it's hilarious that I even know who André Hazes is. But we need him tonight, but unfortunately he's dead. He died a few years ago.
Oh dear, you build us up and then let us down. Never mind. Well, Daniel, it's stage 15 of the Giro to Piancavallo, as you say, and there was a real shake-up. You could have put the names of the riders in the top 10 in a hat and drawn them out almost at random, or perhaps sort of scattered them on the floor. What would be the odds of Joao Almeida coming out on top, because he still is in the pink jersey, but it is very, very close now. We had the hardest finish of the Giro so far, a 14-kilometre climb, and a fifth stage win for Ineos Grenadiers, and a first Grand Tour stage win for Theo Gegenhardt, who's featured in the podcast over the years. A real shake-up in the GC, as I say. Wilco Kelderman's now only 15 seconds behind Almeida. He started the day 56 seconds behind. Going into the bottom of the climb, it was another Ineos rider, Rowan Dennis, who had a minute's lead over the rest of a breakaway, which had included the likes of Villela Visconti, who is the new King of the Mountains leader, by the way. Matt Holmes, Manuele Boado, Thomas de Gendt, Danny Navarro were in there as well. The peloton was still almost 2 minutes back, but Sunweb did a very good job of cutting that lead down in short order. They set a very good pace, and it wasn't long till some big names were in real trouble. Peo Bilbao, third this morning, was dropped. Fuglsang was dropped. Then Nibali was dropped, and the GC was getting ripped up in front of our eyes. When Chris Hamilton of Sunweb pulled off the front after a long and very strong turn, Jai Hindley accelerated, and only Kelderman and Theo Gegenhardt were able to go with him, and that consigned Almeida to a really tough chase on his own, because his teammates Masnada and Knox were further down the road. But Almeida dug in and limited his losses very well. It's a slender lead now, and Sunweb have riders in second and third place. A real shake-up in that top 10. Hindley has leapt from 10th to 3rd. He is 2 minutes 56 back, quite a gap to Almeida. 1 second behind Hindley is Theo Gegenhardt. Bilbao, Nibali, Pozzovivo and Masnada have all slipped down overall. And Brandon McNulty, who jumped from 11th to 4th in the time trial yesterday, has slipped back to 11th today. And, well, what does that mean? Let's hear from Jai Hindley, who was a big player on the stage today. He's back in the white jersey as best young rider. He's currently holding third place. Who is the favourite for the Giro now, according to him?
For me, he's the red hot favourite. So, yeah, we keep trying and hopefully get him in the jersey and defend it.
Well, if there's any doubt, Daniel, Jai Hindley is referring to his teammate Wilco Kelderman, who he feels now is the big favourite for the Giro. Is that how you see it?
Well, Jai ruled today, didn't he, Napalm? he's always on time. He's always on time in this. Do you get those references? The Buffalo definitely, definitively would not get those references.
Have you been looking those up in Biarritz Airport, those references?
I'm very familiar. Don't worry, I'm very familiar with the discography of Jai Rule. Don't you worry about that. Is Wilco Man the favourite for the Giro? Well, today was fascinating because Piancavallo is, on paper, it's not necessarily, you know, the most extreme climb. And it's also, it's a wide road, and it's kind of, I always think it's a bit of a kind of an American-style climb. If you see the climbs at the Tour of California or Tour of Utah, you know, wide road. And sometimes you have the impression, or the last couple of times Giro's been up there, people have sort of, they kind of lose their reference points because the road is so wide, and it's a climb where a team can set a really, you know, a hot pace, which is what Sunweb did today, a really sort of rolling climb but deceptively steep. And I was obviously very impressed with Sunweb. I mean, how could you not be? And well, we learned a lot about who's not going to win the Giro, I think, didn't we? Definitively, we can say, I think, that Fuglsang is not going to win it. I don't know whether it was a total abdication on Nibali's part, but he's 3 minutes 29 down now. And yeah, the path is clearing for Wilco Mann. The only the new threat on the horizon is gap year Theo Gegenhardt. Wiki, as we found out the other day, some of his Ineos teammates call him because of his outstanding knowledge about a range of different subjects.
You're absolutely right, Daniel. Theo Gegenhardt, it could be the wild card in this final week of the Giro. I mean, a podium place is certainly within reach now. I mean, he's only a second behind Jai Hindley as it is, but why not look beyond that? Because we just don't know what this final week of the Giro is going to throw at the riders, and we just don't know how Almeida and even Kelderman will respond if they're put under pressure and challenged. And Gegenhardt, the trajectory of his Giro is encouraging as well, because he's, you know, moving up and looking good at just the right time. If you think back to the start of the race, he would have been coming into it thinking that his role would be to support Geraint Thomas on the mountain stages, and of course Thomas then crashed in the neutral section on stage 3, and that must have been a really discombobulating day for all of the Ineos riders, because they had this one goal, and then all of a sudden they have to think about, you know, what else they're going to do. And for Gegenhardt, his objective changed on the road over the course of an afternoon. And if you remember on that climb to Etna, he was really well placed at one point on the climb, and then when the pace went on, he did drift back and lost a bit of time. But since then, it seems to me that he's kind of regrouped, consolidated, and he hasn't gone in, you know, any kind of big breaks looking for a stage win in the way that some of his teammates have done. Instead, he has ridden a GC rider's race from that point on, even though, you know, he was outside the top 20 after that stage to Etna. He's put his nose in the wind a few times. Every time the road's gone up, he's looked to do something. So he's clearly been feeling good. And I mean, today he didn't put a foot wrong, did he? Every time the riders were going backwards, he was in the right position. You know, he wasn't caught on the wrong wheel. He wasn't making life difficult for himself at any stage. He just rode in exactly the right position. And even when he found himself with two Sunweb riders, I mean, I know they were going for gaining time and had a different objective, but that was by no means a gimme. Gagan Hart still had to win that stage because, well, you can't tell me that Kelderman wouldn't have taken the maximum time bonus if he'd been able to. So a really impressive stage win. And then to see him, of course, point to the sky and dedicate the victory to Nico Portal, his sports director, who died earlier this year. You know, I think is a reminder that, you know, Portal's absence is being felt in Team Ineos every time they get on the road.
He's really the new danger alongside Almeida, his fellow Hagen Axians Berman alumnus. And it's difficult to see beyond those two. The only caveat to that is that Nibali is someone who's obviously already got a glittering palmarès, and we've seen before that he's not afraid of risking everything with a long range attack and doing something audacious. And I would suggest he will try something of that nature again, because he's certainly not interested in finishing seventh or eighth on general classification, as sort of respectable as that would be at his age. And yeah, there were some other disappointments, weren't there? Pozzovivo as well. Again, not really a climb. It's a real sort of rolling climb, although it is quite steep. So I wasn't that surprised that Pozzovivo struggled somehow.
You are listening to The Grandest Tour by The Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a business, find out more at iwoca.co.uk. iwoca.co.uk.
Thank you very much to iWalker for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. iWalker have been with us since the spring, and they have seen us through our Giro and the Tour de France and now the Grandest Tour. And it's no exaggeration to say that their support has been essential to us this year. It's been a very turbulent year for all businesses, but particularly small businesses, with the coronavirus situation making things very difficult. Check out iwoca.co.uk, that's iwoca.co.uk, to see what iWalker could do for your small business. If you run a small business, you can borrow from £1,000 up to £250,000 for your business, perhaps to buy new stock or invest in growth plans, or just to keep your cash flow smooth, especially if you're a seasonal business looking at the winter that's coming up. So check out iWalker and see whether there's anything that they may be able to help you with. Their motto is business loans simplified. 257 to Almeida. I guess the question now is whether Almeida has got enough to kind of cling on, you know, against Kelderman. I mean, 15 seconds, you'd have to say the pendulum swung pretty definitively towards Kelderman today.
I think so, Napal. I mean, just looking at the stages to come, well, as things stand, because obviously in the back of our minds is the possibility that there could be stage cancellations or climbs taken off the route. We've got a very difficult stage to San Daniele del Friuli, which is a circuit where they do three laps of a very difficult circuit with a tough climb, and that's stage 16. And then there's the stage to Madonna di Campiglio, which is a bona fide mountain stage with a summit finish, and then the Stelvio day, which is the day I think, well, there are a lot of doubts about whether the race will actually do the Stelvio, but then that's the summit finish as well to Lago or Laghi di Cancano, then a flat stage, and then the big day in the Alps, about which there's been less speculation, the stage that goes over the Agnello, but you would think that that is also under threat as well, although the descent of the Agnello, I mean, my big preoccupation, I keep mentioning it, is the temperature, really, and particularly when the riders are descending. I was looking a few things up about this the other day, about wind chill descending, and my fag packet calculation was that the wind chill when the riders descend the Stelvio, if they descend the Stelvio, will be equivalent to about -40. on Thursday. So, but that's they're the stages left, Lionel. So there's a lot of climbing still to come. And I suppose, you know, all of these riders, to a greater or lesser extent, all the guys at the top of the general classification would be considered vulnerable or brittle simply because they don't have a long history of having contended in Grand Tours. Wilco Mann is the exception to that. But he's never finished on the podium of a Grand Tour. He's come close. He finished fourth in the Vuelta a few years ago. But he's, you know, if he's in a position, we might find himself in a position in a couple of days where he's leading the race in the pink jersey. You know, that's going to be uncharted territory for him. So all still to play for, isn't it?
It certainly is. Yeah, Kelderman over the years has been, I've always bigged him up when he's had a good start to a Grand Tour. And then something has either gone wrong for him or he's just sort of slipped away. Whereas it's been quite the opposite. He's certainly from my point of view, just quietly been there or thereabouts all the way through the race, hasn't he? I mean, he's been in fourth place since Etna, and all the attention really has been on this sensational run in the pink jersey for Almeida. So it's certainly looking like Kelderman has kind of timed a run at the pink jersey right. I was saying in last night's podcast that really with the threat of mountains being taken out, possible stages being shortened or perhaps even cancelled altogether, although I think that would be, it would have to be pretty dramatic for stages to be completely cancelled. You really do now at this point want to be in pink rather than hoping to make up time, because there's just no way of knowing what the weather will do and whether there will be enough opportunities to recover that time. Let's hear briefly from Luke Roberts, who is the sports director of Sunweb, about how well Sunweb have been doing in this Giro. They obviously had a fantastic Tour de France, racing in a completely different way, absolutely no GC ambitions at all there, but they were hunting for stages, and very successfully they managed to bag a few. Here they are going for GC, and well, they're putting together a pretty good run at the pink jersey.
Today we had the big mountain test to finish off the second week. With our guys, we'd been holding back a bit throughout the week just to be a bit conservative throughout the week, ready for a big day today. After yesterday's time trial, still being in a good position, inside a minute from the pink jersey. Wanted to have a go at it today and see if we could take some of that time back. The guys have done a fantastic ride, basically controlling the race from the front once the break went. Nico Den's really strong today. Taking over then. Chad's done a great ride through the valley, and then the guys on the climb, then Martin, Sam, Chris was fantastic. Basically dwindling the GC group down to only eight riders then, and then Jai's just finished it off exceptionally. Basically pacing Wilco to the finish line, and super strong ride from the guys today. Wilco finishing off there with the second place. The stage win or the pink jersey would have been a nice bonus today, but our goal ultimately was to get some time back on the pink jersey and try to take time on other GC competitors, and that we've definitely achieved, so we can be really happy with how today went.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport, long-term supporters of the Cycling Podcast, of course. And, well, absolutely everyone who listens to the podcast knows that the discount code is SISCP25. If you want 25% off your SIS energy bars and gels and recovery drinks and all the other things that are in the SIS range, then go to scienceinsport.com and enter the code SISCP25. I think Daniel is the only person who doesn't know the code off by heart by now.
I suppose, Lionel, one thing that Sunweb will certainly be very grateful for and counting on is that with Jai Hindley there, you know, they've also got a card to play in terms of, you know, putting the other teams and Almeida and even Gegenhardt maybe further down the road on the back foot could create a very difficult situation, especially with, you know, if Hindley were to go on the offensive. I mean, Chris Hamilton showed today how strong he is. They've got Sam Omen as well. So, you know, they're potentially in a position where they can have one of those guys, Hamilton and Omen, acting as Kelderman's bodyguard. And Hindley, more of a rogue aggressor.
A rogue aggressor. Well, yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is that the gap back to, well, even Pozzovivo is just under a minute. That's from Hindley to Pozzovivo. So all of those riders in there, Gegenhardt, Bilbao, Mica, Nibali, Pozzovivo, if they're not hoping still for outright victory, certainly it very, very well in the hunt for the podium. So that makes Hindley someone that they would all react to, isn't it? You know, if Hindley moved, they would be bound to react, and that alters the dimension of the racing and does make it easier in a way for Kelderman just to kind of sit there while everyone's watching Hindley. Kelderman can just take advantage of that and do a bit of following without necessarily having to make, you know, aggressive efforts himself, and then hope that that's enough to pop Almeida rather than having to do it himself. So I can see what you're saying, but I definitely would rather be in pink than chasing it at this point, just in case.
So we've got a nickname now, or I should say our colleagues on the official Giro Italian podcasts have come up with this nickname, or they've at least inherited it from, I think, some of the Portuguese journalists. For Almeida, is they've been calling him Grande Reserva. It's used for sort of superior quality wine that's aged for longer, but the Portuguese would be Gran Reserva. So João Gran Reserva Almeida. What do you think of that?
Well, the obvious flaw in that is that Almeida hasn't been aged for very long at all.
That's true, actually. It's rubbish, isn't it? Terrible nickname. No, the other thing I found out today, Lionel, was that Primož Roglič, who is presumably like me in the Basque Country waiting for the Vuelta to start, and won his first race, or the first race he ever won, was at Piancavallo.
Interesting. A pro race or an amateur race, do you mean?
Amateur race, I believe.
Interesting.
I believe it might even have been a sort of weekend warrior type race. Of course, we're not far, or Piancavallo is not far from the Slovenian border.
Well, Daniel, it's been quite a day keeping tabs on the Tour of Flanders and then the Giro d'Italia. And then, well, tomorrow, the Giro and the Vuelta overlapping. Not the first time that the two races have overlapped. Back in certainly the 70s, I seem to remember from having made that episode with Johan de Muynck, the last Belgian to win a Grand Tour, he got a dispensation to finish the Vuelta and miss a kind of ceremonial prologue that didn't count towards the GC in the Giro. But this, I mean, having the two races overlap for a whole week is, well, it's very different for us, isn't it?
It is. Quite disorienting, Nate. But I'm hoping that, you know, when I arrive in the mix zone on Tuesday morning, I won't be sort of, I will be floundering around. I'm always floundering around, but I'm hoping I'm not, you know, asking the Sunweb press officer for a word with Wilco Man, or the, you know, Jumbo Visma press officer for a reaction from Wout van Aert.
Well, let's hope not. A tip for the Vuelta? Have you looked at the start lift enough yet?
Yes. Well, you know, Rog has got to be the defending champion. Primož Roglič has got to be the favourite, I think, especially with Jumbo-Visma, with the team that they have. It's more or less their A team. It's more or less their Tour de France team, with a couple of changes. Then Thibaut Pinot should have a great chance as well, providing he's in, you know, the form he wasn't in at the Tour de France, the form he wanted to be in at the Tour but wasn't. Then you've got guys like Carapaz, and Vlasov is going to be interesting at Astana. But the really interesting thing for me, and we're going to talk about this, you guys are going to be calling me up and I'm going to be delivering dispatches from the Vuelta. The really interesting thing is the route, because it's highly unusual. I think in the first week, out of the first six stages, there are four mountain stages, I would say, for proper GC days, and that's going to be very odd, very unusual. We saw that at the Tour de France, when there were quite a few sort of hilly days early on, that had quite an effect on the race. But you can sort of magnify that times that by two or three here at the Vuelta. It's going to be it's going to be intense and dramatic from day one, I think.
Well, you'll be at the Vuelta for ITV, of course, but we'll be checking in with you over the course of the race, probably once the Giro is finished, I guess. It'll be a packed podcast for a week or so before all of our attention will be on the Vuelta. But Daniel, enjoy the opening week. Do send a few photos if you get nice meals on along the way. Always enjoy seeing what you're having for dinner.
Our poor colleagues at the Giro, over the next few days, there's been, the sort of lockdown or the COVID measures have been intensified in Lombardy in particular, and the race is arriving in Lombardy. And I was thinking the other day that it might be quite difficult to get any kind of meal there. Never mind the old, I think we were talking recently, weren't we, Napalm, about the famous pizzoccheri, the buckwheat pasta, you know, in melted cheese, which are typical for some of the areas they're going through, particularly the day when the race is supposed to go over the Stelvio. Be none of that, Napalm. You have to make it yourself.
Well, I'd better get in the kitchen then. Yep. A spag bowl tonight in honour of the Giro.
We should really be tiramisu. They were up near Tolmezzo, weren't they, today?
They were,
Purportedly, disputedly, the home of tiramisu.
Well, yesterday, obviously, they went past Treviso, within touching distance of Treviso. The two tiramisu towns, aren't they, Tolmezzo and Treviso? Still can't decide which one I preferred. Probably just Treviso edged it, I think. Anyway, enough talk about tiramisu. Daniel, get yourself to the Vuelta. We'll touch base in a few days or so.
We will, Lionel.
We'll be back on Tuesday. Well, I'll be back on Tuesday with Richard and with Ian Boswell. Ian's a former teammate of Theo Gegenhardt, of course, so we'll take the opportunity to ask him what he made of Theo's stage win today and his chances over the final week of the Giro. Looking forward to that. So there's no episode tomorrow except for a Kilometre Zero supported by Zwift, and this episode is called NTT SOS, and it's a look at the NTT team's search for a sponsor. They're teetering on the brink somewhat at the moment, as so many other teams have in recent years, and we've spoken to some of the riders and also to the team boss Doug Ryder about the bid to save the team and find an alternative title sponsor. So listen out for that, and we will be back on Tuesday.